We talk a lot about water and fire in our region. They're both huge ongoing issues here. And we often hear about studies of the relationship of water and fire, usually the kind that shows less water, as in from the sky, equals more fire. But a recently published paper tells of research that flipped the relationship around and studied what happens to water supplies when forests burn. Basically, if a tree is no longer taking up water and losing it to evaporation, water is saved. Let's dig into the findings and how they might be used. Jim Roche is a hydrologist with the National Parks Service and is the lead author on the research, and he's our guest on The Exchange. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good to have you here. Tell us about what got the research started.
We had thought about overstocked forests in the Sierra Nevada. Basically, we have about twice the biomass that was there historically and about four times the stem density in trees. And we were wondering, well, if we were somehow to magically be able to thin forests back to something like what they would have looked at like at the turn of the 20th century, what would that mean in terms of water savings? And that's what got things started.
So it really doesn't begin with fires. It begins with just what you got there now in the way of density and a look at potentially how much more water might not be taken up by trees if there were fewer trees out there.
That's right.
So where in the Sierra did you look? I mean, you had a couple of different locations, it sounds like, that you worked with here.
Right. So we couldn't look immediately at the whole range, but we started with the American watershed, which is a lower, wetter watershed, and the Kings to the south, which is much higher and drier, and so those are sort of our end members. And we looked at how fires between 1990 and 2008 impacted the amount of evapotranspiration, basically the amount of water that the trees and the ground surface is evaporating annually.
Well, give us an idea then for what would be a quote-unquote average tree in either one of these watersheds. I mean, about how much water do they take up and lose over the course of a given year?
So for the very highly productive American river watershed in the middle elevations around 1,000 meters, 3,300 feet above sea level, these forests can be consuming between 600 and 800 or up to 1,000 millimeters per year, you know, about three plus feet of water across averaged across the forest area.
3 feet in what kind of container space?
Whatever container space you want. We think about agricultural fields requiring about 40 inches to, you know, sustain almonds.
So we're talking about annual precipitation rates?
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can think of it that way.
Yeah, makes
right.
sense. Okay. Jim Roche, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about trees and water, and you can join the conversation here, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I can see how this would have been a massive project if you tried to look at the whole Sierra, but even with just the watersheds you looked at, I mean, given numbers of trees, measurements of water, and so on, this has had to involve a whole lot of data.
That's right, and I wouldn't have been able to do it with my little old laptop, so we did a fair amount of cloud computing to pull this all together using Landsat or satellite imagery from when they began the program back in the mid-80s through 2016, and so for each area that we looked on the ground, approximately 90 meters by 90 meters, there would be on the order of 900 plus images that we would need to go through and average and consolidate into these annual averages.
I'm really fascinated by the numbers you gave at the outset, because while we often hear about how overstocked the forests are, I think you're the first person who's ever delivered some actual numbers on this. You're talking twice the biomass. So basically what would be there, tree parts, all the underbrush, everything, there's twice as much there as there would be in a forest where fire was still a part of the ecosystem?
That's right, and I should be clear that that research from Brandon Collins comes from the Yosemite area, so, you know, approximately midway between these two watersheds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But four times stem density, too, so that's it's a barely walkable kind of forest, it sounds like. In fact, I had somebody tell me recently about when you're on the road, it's great. When you get off into the woods, you can barely get through the underbrush.
Right, and historic densities would have been very much that sort of park-like setting with very large trees, few and far between.
Okay, so let's talk about the process of envirotranspiration, which I notice in the research often gets shortened to ET. And when we talk about ET, we're not talking about the kind that phones home. Evapotranspiration. Walk us through that process, if you would.
So evapotranspiration is basically the water that all the plants use, but also water is evaporated directly from the surfaces of plants and the soil and rocks. So we focused on vegetated areas, primarily forested areas, and didn't look at those other areas higher in the watershed that wouldn't be evaporating water using the same processes. So we use a number of sites up and down the range and in Southern California that use flux towers, and you might think of a flux tower as an inverted rain bucket. It measures the amount of water that is escaping from the surface up past the trees. So these are very massive towers, up to 300 feet tall. They need to be above the forest canopy to be able to measure how much water vapor is leaving the forested area. And we correlate how much those areas are using with essentially the forest greenness as detected from a satellite, the Landsat satellites in this case. And that correlation is quite well described in a number of publications prior to ours, and it is the central tool that we can then use to estimate how much water or evapotranspiration is occurring across these large watershed areas.
So did you look only at areas where the trees were currently healthy? Did you look at burn areas too? I mean, or is it just the assumption that, you know, if a tree's dead, there's no evapotranspiration going on?
So we didn't make any assumptions about that. We did focus on forest fire areas because those are well documented, and there's good information about the amount of what I'll call biomass reduction or basal area reduction, how many trees were effectively removed by the fire. And from that, we can look at what a severe fire does versus a moderate severity or low severity fire in terms of how much water reduction occurs.
And how I mean, were you able to affect the essentially stand-by-stand comparisons, you know, over the course of an acre of a healthy stand versus one that had a burn-through, how different the water difference was?
Effectively, yes. We in order to make these calculations, we need to compare them to unburned areas, understanding that over time the whole forest is changing. Even unburned areas are getting denser or getting less dense due to bug kill and other factors. So it's always against the background of what's changing around the burned areas. So we absolutely did compare both of those and could tell what the difference is between unburned areas and those burned areas.
And how big a difference is it?
It's pretty substantial in those middle high productive areas. Unburned areas, for example, in the American, were using on the order of about 800 millimeters of water per year, on the order of 30 inches of water. And when that area received a moderate severity burn, that decreased from about 800 to 500 or 600 millimeters per year.
Right, that is a substantial difference then, for sure. Let's take a call here. We have Kent in Rogue River on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about trees and water use and fires and density and all that with Jim Roche at the National Park Service, where he's a hydrologist. Hi, Kent.
Good morning, Jim and Jeff. I would like to challenge your model. I think it's incomplete. And here's a couple of observations on which I base that. If you're an early riser and you go out and look at plants, not just trees, but, you know, plants, bamboo is a really good example, but also even oak trees. Look closely in the early morning when the dew point is below the air temperature. You'll find that trees are actually collecting water and sometimes dropping it on the ground. Another observation is in the summer when you have an oak tree in this area, if you watch carefully as the summer proceeds. The grass will remain greener under the tree than away from the tree. So what I am saying is that trees actually gather water by condensation, and that part of the system doesn't appear to be in your model. I think that in some cases, they actually gather more than they use.
Kent, thanks for the analysis and the polite way in which you asked the question. Appreciate it. Jim Roche, what do you say?
Okay, thanks. And those are good points. I've observed a similar phenomenon in the foothills area here in Central California. I won't say that our model incorporates that. It doesn't. All I can say is that we are basing these on measured evapotranspiration values at these measurement points. So, you know, essentially like measuring rain, we're measuring the evapotranspiration. So that incorporates all of those processes, whether trees are gathering water via condensation, but they're also using water, and that water is evaporating back off of the forest floor and from the tree and being respirated, breathed by the tree, if you will. So those numbers that we use incorporate all of those processes. Can I tell which process is which? No, I can't from these kinds of measurements. But the measurements themselves are robust. They include all of the factors, and we feel very comfortable that then that can be applied in areas that for which these towers are measuring. So the Sierra Nevada, if we're talking about humid West Cascade forests, the story might be a little bit different.
How different were the findings from the two watersheds, from the American River and from the Kings River?
Proportionally, they were similar. But the American definitely had much more of, there was much more of an effect. And the reason we think that's true is because the American basically gets a lot more water, a lot more precipitation than the Kings. And so if vegetation is thinned by fire, the other trees have plenty of water, so the excess water can percolate into soils and move to stream flow, and effectively can become runoff or increase soil moisture. Down in the Kings, there's much less water, and so removing some biomass has the effect of making the other trees around it happier, and so they grow better and use up that excess water. So in essence, it would take greater thinning in those areas to achieve similar results.
So then what do we do with the information? I mean, is thinning a logical step for people to read out of what you learned in this research?
It is one potential tool that's out there, and there's a lot of work to be done in terms of the impacts of thinning relative to the amount of water that the forest might use. That data is generally incomplete and hard to come by. We did look at a few sites in the study, but found that the forest fire information was much more complete, especially at the watershed scale. So I would say this informs that future research. It shows that potential, but it also shows the potential of using fire as that tool for thinning. Certainly, fire ecologists have been saying this for a long time. And now we basically added one more bullet point to their list of the benefits of fire.
Now, this is a cautionary note I hear from people when we talk about putting fire back in the ecosystems, that you got to clean out some of that stuff first. So the thinning has to happen first, and then you can restore fire. Is that the general realm of direction here?
Yeah, I think that's accurate from that community.
So we've been talking in terms of millimeters, and I want to get this into liters or gallons or something. Give us some idea of how much deeper a reservoir could be, for example, if a forest were thinned to what its natural amount of biomass would be.
Right, and we did try to get at this question. So over that period, 1990 to 2008, we estimate that in the American, that resulted in a net increase in the water, or let's say net reduction in evapotranspiration of about 17 billion gallons. about 50,000 acre feet, depending on what your listeners are familiar with, and about four times less than that in the Kings, just because it's a much drier watershed.
That's a lot of water. And what was the acre footage? 17 billion gallons, I heard loud and clear. What was the acre footage?
About 50,000.
Okay, so 50,000 acres covered at a depth of 1 foot, which is that's a lot of water.
That's right. And we went just a little bit further and asked the question, if these watersheds had burned at approximately their historic frequency, the American during that period of time, about 10% of the watershed burned. Historically, almost all of the watershed would have burned in that 20-year period and would have been at a much lower density as a result. And we estimate that those numbers could be on the order of 10 times greater than what we estimated had things been closer to their historic fire return interval.
Those return intervals, can they be very different basically from one side of a forest to the other, one side of a hill to the other?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is averaged over the watershed area. And as a number to kind of take home, this amounts to about 5%, 5 to 10% of the total outflow or stream flow from these watersheds.
All right. So another case for some thinning and sort of restoring fire to the ecosystem. There was a water district that participated in funding the study. Is that right?
Right, the Merced Irrigation District and the Integrated Regional Watershed Program helped fund this.
And are either of them making any moves to make a case for what to do with the information you've got here?
I'm not aware at present.
Okay. Jim Roche is a hydrologist with the National Park Service. He's the lead author of the study in the April 6th issue of Ecohydrology called Estimating Evapotranspiration Change Due to Forest Treatment and Fire at the Basin Scale in the Sierra Nevada, California. His major finding between 1990 and 2008, 17 billion gallons of water could have been saved if there were fire and thinning in the ecosystem. Jim, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
All right, take care.